Good morning, and happy Valentine's Day. We are listening to Short Stories with Miss Sam, brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. This is our very first episode. If you enjoy it, tune in every week at 8:30 a.m. to WHDD 91.9 FM to catch our show. My name is Miss Sam, and I'm the Children's Librarian at the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. We have all sorts of wonderful books there for children of all ages, and lovely virtual crafting and story times besides. This morning, I'm here to tell you two short stories. The first story is very short and very sweet. Both are from a book of Norse tales for children printed in 1892, and both share a main character named Boots, who appeared in many Norse stories as the clever youngest brother and hero. The first is about telling stories, but not in the way that you or I do. At least, I hope you don't tell stories this way. In this tale, telling stories is another way of saying to lie or to exaggerate. Stuff up for the fun of it and tell it like it's the truth. In it, two people with such a proclivity become man and wife. So, I thought, perfect for Valentine's Day. Without further ado, I present to you Boots, who made the princess say, "That's a story." Once upon a time, there was a king who had a daughter, and she was such a dreadful storyteller that the like of her was not to be found far or near. So the king gave out that if anyone could tell such a string of lies as would get her to say, "That's a story," he would have her to wife and half the kingdom besides. Well, many came, as you may fancy, to try their luck, for everyone would have been very glad to have the princess, to say nothing of the kingdom. But they all cut a sorry figure, for the princess was so given to storytelling that all their lies went in one ear and out the other. Among the rest came three brothers to try their luck, and the two elder went first, but they fared no better than those who had gone before them. Last of all, the third, Boots, set off and found the princess in the farmyard. "Good morning," said he, "and thank you for nothing." "Good morning," said she, "and the same to you." Then she went on, "You haven't such a fine farmyard as ours, I'll be bound, for when two shepherds stand, one at each end of it, and blow their ram's horns, the one can't hear the other." "Haven't we, though?" answered Boots. "Ours is far bigger, for when a cow begins to go with calf at one end of it, she doesn't get to the other end before the time to drop her calf has come." "I dare say," said the princess, "but you haven't got such a big ox, after all, as ours yonder, for when two men sit, one on each horn, they can't touch each other with a 20-foot rule." "Stuff," said Boots, "is that all? Why, we have an ox so big that when two men sit, one on each horn, and each blows his great mountain trumpet, they can't hear one another." "I dare say," said the princess, "but you haven't got so much milk as we, I'll be bound, for we milk our kine into great and carry them indoors, and empty them into great tubs, and we make great, great cheeses." "Oh, you do, do you?" said Boots. "Well, we milk ours in great tubs, and then we put them in carts and drive them indoors, and then we turn them out into great brewing vats, and so we make cheeses as big as a great house. We had, too, a dun mare to tread the cheese well together when it was making, but once she tumbled down into the cheese and we lost her, and after we had eaten at this cheese 7 years, we came upon a great dun mare alive and kicking. Well, once after that I was going to drive this mare to the mill, and her backbone snapped in two. But I wasn't put out, not I, for I took a spruce sapling and put it into her for a backbone, and she had no other backbone all the while we had her. But the sapling grew into such a tall tree that I climbed right up to heaven by it, and when I got there I saw the Virgin Mary sitting and spinning the foam of the sea into pig's bristle ropes. But just then the spruce fir broke short off, and I couldn't get down again, so the Virgin Mary let me down by one of the ropes, and down I slipped right into a fox's hole, and who should I see there but my mother and your father cobbling shoes, and just as I stepped in, my mother gave your father such a box on the ear that it made his whiskers curl." "That's a story," said the princess. "My father never did any such thing in all his born days." So Boots got the princess to wife, and half the kingdom besides. The end. Boots told quite a tall tale in that one. So the second story we're going to read today is about wishes and love. In it, Boots proves that money can only get a person so far in this life, and that it's foolish to put too much store in it. Our second story is The Best Wish. Once upon a time, there were three brothers. I don't quite know how it happened, but each of them had got the right to wish one thing, whatever he chose. So the two elder were not long a-thinking. They wished that every time they put their hands in their pockets, they might pull out a piece of money. For, said they, the man who has as much money as he wishes for his is always sure to get on in the world. But the youngest wished for something better still. He wished that every woman he saw might fall in love with him as soon as she saw him. And you shall soon hear how far better this was than gold and goods. When they all had wished their wishes, the two elder were for setting out into the world, and Boots, their younger brother, asked if he mightn't go along with them, but they wouldn't hear such a thing. "Wherever we go," they said, "we shall be treated as counts and kings. But you, you starveling wretch, who haven't a penny, and never will have one, who do you think will care a bit about you?" "Well, but in spite of that, I'd like to go with you," said Boots. "Perhaps a dainty bit may fall to my share, too, off the plates of such high and mighty lords." At last, after begging and praying, he got to leave to go with them, if he would be their servant, else they wouldn't hear of it. So when they'd gone a day or so, they came to an inn, where the two who had the money alighted, and called for fish and flesh and fowl and brandy and mead and everything that was good. But Boots, poor fellow, had to look after their luggage and all that belonged to the two great people. Now, as he went to and fro outside and loitered about in the inn-yard, the innkeeper's wife looked out of the window and saw the servant of the gentleman upstairs, and, all at once, she thought she had never set eyes on such a handsome chap. So she stared and stared, and the longer she looked, the handsomer he seemed. What, by the Dale's skin and bones, is it that you are standing there gaping out of the window?" said her husband. "I think 'twould be better if you looked how the suckling pig is getting on, instead of hanging out of the window that way. Don't you know what grand folks we have in the house today?" "Oh," said his old dame, "I don't care a farthing about such a pack of rubbish. If they don't like it, they may lump it and be off. But just do come and look at this lad out in the yard, so handsome a fellow I never saw in all my born days. And if you'll do as I wish, we'll ask him to step in and treat him a little, for, poor lad, he seems to have had a hard fight of it." "Have you lost the little brains you had?" said the husband, whose eyes glistened with rage. "Into the kitchen with you, and mind the fire, but don't stand there glowering after strange men." So the wife had nothing left for it but to go into the kitchen and look after the cooking. As for the lad outside, she couldn't get leave to ask him in, or treat him either. But just as she was about spitting the pig in the kitchen, she made an excuse for running out into the yard, and then and there she gave Boots a pair of scissors, of such a kind that they cut of themselves, out of the air, the loveliest clothes anyone ever saw, silk and satin and all that was fine. "This you shall have, because you are so handsome," said the innkeeper's wife. So when the two elder brothers had crammed themselves with roast and boiled, they wished to be off again, and Boots had to stand behind their carriage and be their servant, and so they travelled a good way until they came to another inn. There the two brothers again alighted and went indoors, but Boots, who had no money, they wouldn't have inside with them. No, he must wait outside and watch the luggage. "And mind," they said, "if anyone asks whose servant you are, we are two foreign princes." Now, as it had happened before, while Boots stood hanging about in the yard, the innkeeper's wife came to the window and saw him, and she too fell in love with him, just like the first innkeeper's wife. And there she stood and stared, for she thought she could never have her fill of looking at him. Then her husband came running through the room with something the two princes had ordered. "Don't just stand there like a cow at the barn door, but take this into the kitchen and look after the fish kettle," said the man. "Don't you see what grand people we have in the house today?" "I don't care a farthing for such a pack of rubbish," said the wife. "If they don't like what they get, then they may lump it and eat what they brought with them. But just do come here and see what you shall see. Such a handsome fellow as walks here out in the yard, I never saw in all my born days. Shan't we ask him in and treat him a little? He looks as if he needed it, poor chap." And then she went on, "Such a love, such a love. "You never had much wit, and the little you had is clean gone, I can see," said the man, who was as much more angry than the first innkeeper, and chased his wife back, neck and crop, into the kitchen. "Into the kitchen with you, and don't stand there glowering after lads," he said. So she had to go in and mind the fish kettle, and she dared not treat Boots, for she was afraid of her old man. But as she stood there making up the fire, she made an excuse for running out into the yard, and then and there she gave Boots a tablecloth, which was such that it covered itself with the best dishes you could think of, as soon as it was spread out. "This you shall have," she said, "because you are so handsome." So when the two brothers had eaten and drank of all that was in the house, and had paid the bill in hard cash, they set off again, and Boots stood up behind them, behind their carriage. But when they had gone so far that they grew hungry again, they turned into a third inn, and called for the best and the dearest they could think of. "For," said they, "we are two kings on our travels, and as for our money, it grows like grass." Well, when the innkeeper heard that, there was such a roasting and baking and boiling, why, you might smell the dinner at the next neighbor's house, though it wasn't very near, and the innkeeper was at his wit's end to find all he wished to put before the two kings. But Boots, he had to stand outside here, too, and look after the things in the carriage. So it was the same story all over again. The innkeeper's wife came to the window and peeped out, and there she saw the servant standing by the carriage. Such a handsome chap she had never set eyes on before. So she looked and looked, and the more she stared, the handsomer he seemed to the innkeeper's wife. Then out came the innkeeper, scampering through the room with some dainty which the traveling kings had ordered, and he wasn't very soft-tongued when he saw the old dame standing and glowering out of the window. "Don't you know better than to stand gaping and staring there when we have such great folk in the house?" he said. "Back into the kitchen with you this minute, to your custards." "Well, well," said she, "as for them I don't care a pin. If they can't wait till the custards are baked, they may go without, that's all. But do, pray, come here, and you'll see such a lovely lad standing out there in the yard. Why, I never saw such a pretty fellow in all my life. Shan't we ask him in now and treat him a little, for he looks as if it would do him good. Oh, what a darling, what a darling!" "A wanton gadabout you've been all your days, and so you are still," said her husband, who was in such a rage he scarce knew which leg to stand on. "But if you don't be off to your custards this minute, I'll soon find out how to make you stir your stumps. See if I don't." So the wife had off to her custards as fast as she could, for she knew that her husband would stand no nonsense. But as she stood there over the fire, she stole out into the yard and gave Boots a tap. "If you only turn this tap," she said, "you'll get the finest drink of whatever kind you choose, both mead and wine and brandy, and this you shall have because you are so handsome." So when the two brothers had eaten and drunk all they could, they started from the inn, and Boots stood up behind again as their servant, and thus they drove far and wide till they came to a king's palace. There the two elder gave themselves out for two emperor's sons, and as they had plenty of money and were so fine that their clothes shone again ever so far off, they were well treated. They had rooms in the palace, and the king couldn't tell how to make enough of them. But Boots, who went about in the same rags he stood in when he left home, and who never had a penny in his pocket, he was taken up by the king's guard and put across to an island, whether they used to row over all the beggars and rogues that came to the palace. This the king had ordered, because he wouldn't have the mirth at the palace spoilt by these dirty blackguards, and thither, too, only just as much food as would keep body and soul together was sent over every day. Now Boots's brothers saw very well that the guard was rowing him over to the island, but they were glad to be rid of him, and didn't pay the least heed to him. But when Boots got over there, he just pulled out his scissors and began to snip and cut in the air. So the scissors cut out the finest clothes anyone would wish to see, silk and satin both, and all the beggars on the island were soon dressed far finer than the king and all his guests in the palace. After that, Boots pulled out his tablecloth and spread it out. So they got food, too, the poor beggars. Such a feast had never been seen at the king's palace, as was served that day at the beggar's isle. "Thirsty, too, I'll be bound you all are," said Boots, and out with his tap gave it a turn, and so the beggars got all a drop to drink, and such ale and mead the king himself had never tasted in all his life. So the next morning, when those who were to bring the beggars their food on the island came rowing over with the scrappings and the porridge pots and the cheese parings, that was what the poor wretches had, the beggars wouldn't so much as taste them, and the king's men fell to wondering what it could mean. But they all wondered much more when they got a good look at the beggars, for they were so fine the guard thought they must be emperors, or popes at least, and that they must have rowed to the wrong island. But when they looked better about them, they saw they had come to the same old place. They soon found out it must be he whom they had rowed out the day before, who had brought the beggars on the island all this state and bravery, and as soon as they got back to the palace, they were not slow to tell how the man, whom they had rowed over the day before, had dressed out all the beggars so fine and grand that precious things fell from their clothes. And as for the porridge and cheese we took, they wouldn't even taste them, so proud they have got, they said. One of them, too, had smelt out that the lad had a pair of scissors with which he cut the clothes with. When he only snips with those scissors up in the air, he snips and cuts out nothing but silk and satin, said he. So, when the princess heard that, she had neither peace nor rest till she saw the lad and his scissors that cut out silk and satin from the air. Such a pair was worth having, she thought, for it would help, for with its help she would soon get all the finery she wished for. Well, she begged the king so long and hard he was forced to send a messenger for the lad who owned the scissors, and when he came to the palace, the princess asked him if it were true that he had such and such a pair of scissors, and if he would sell it to her. Yes, it was all true, and he had such a pair, said Boots, but sell it he wouldn't. And with that he took the scissors out of his pocket, and snipped with them in the air, till strips of silk and satin flew all about them. Nay, but you must sell me those scissors, said the princess. You may ask what you please for them, but have them I must. No, such a pair of scissors he wouldn't sell at any price, for he could never get such a pair again. And while they stood and haggled for the scissors, the princess had time to look better at Boots, and she too thought, with the innkeeper's wives, that she had never seen such a handsome fellow before. So she began to bargain for the scissors over and over again, and begged and prayed Boots to let her have them. He might ask many, many hundreds of dollars for them. 'Twas all the same to her. So she got them. No, sell them I won't, said Boots, but all the same, if I can get leave to sleep one night on the floor of the princess's bedroom, close by the door, I'll give her the scissors. I'll do her no harm, but if she's afraid, she may have two men to watch inside the room. Yes, the princess was glad enough to give him leave, for she was ready to grant him anything, if only she got the scissors. So Boots lay on the floor inside the princess's bedroom that night, and two men stood watch there, too. But the princess didn't get much rest after all, for when she ought to have been asleep, she must open her eyes to look at Boots. And so it went on the whole night. If she shut her eyes for a minute, she peeped out at him again the next. Such a handsome fellow he seemed to be. Next morning, Boots was rowed over to Beggar's Isle again. But when they came with the porridge and scrapings and cheese parings from the palace, there was no one who would taste them that day either. And so those who brought the food were more astonished than ever. But one of those who brought the food contrived to smell out that the lad who owned the scissors owned also a tablecloth, which he only needed to spread out, and it was covered with all the good things he could wish for. So when he got back to the palace, it wasn't long before he said, "Such hot joints and such custards I never saw the like of in the king's palace." And when the princess heard that, she told it to the king, and begged and prayed so long that he was forced to send a messenger out to the island to fetch the lad who owned the tablecloth. And so Boots came back to the palace. The princess must and would have the cloth of him, and offered him gold and green woods for it, but Boots wouldn't sell it at any price. "But if I may have leave to lie on the bench by the princess's bedside tonight, she shall have the cloth, but if she's afraid, she is welcome to set four men to the watch inside the room." "Yes," the princess agreed to this. So Boots lay down on the bench by the bedside, and the four men watched. But if the princess hadn't much sleep the night before, she had much less this, for she could scarce get a wink of sleep. There she lay wide awake, looking at the lovely lad the whole night through, and after all, the night seemed too short. Next morning, Boots was rowed off again to the Beggar's Island, though sorely against the princess's will, so happy was she to be near him. But it was past praying for. To the island he must go, and there was the end of it. But when those who brought the food to the beggars came with the porridge scrappings and cheese parings, There wasn't one of them who'd even look at what the king had sent, and those who brought it didn't wonder either, though they all thought it strange that none of them were thirsty. But just then, one of the king's guards smelled out that the lad who had owned the scissors and tablecloth had a tap besides, which, if one only turned it a little, gave out the rarest drink, both ale and mead and wine. So when he came back to the palace, he couldn't keep his mouth shut this time any more than before. He went about telling high and low about the tap and how easy it was to draw all sorts of drink out of it. Well, I've never tasted the like of them in the king's palace. Honey and syrup are nothing to them for sweetness. So when the princess heard that, she was all for getting the tap and was nothing loath to strike a bargain with the owner either. So she went again to the king and begged him to send the messenger to Beggar's Island after the lad who owned the scissors and cloth, for now he had another thing worth having, she said. And when the king heard it was a tap, that it was good to give the best ale and wine anyone could drink, when one gave it a turn, he wasn't long in sending the messenger, I should think. So when Boots came up to the palace, the princess asked whether it were true that he had a tap which could do such things. Yes, he had such a tap in his waistcoat pocket. But when the princess wished with all her might to buy it, Boots said, as he'd said twice before, he wouldn't sell it, even if the princess paid half the kingdom for it. But all the same, said Boots, if I may have leave to sleep on the princess's bed tonight, outside of the quilt, she shall have my tap. I shall not do her any harm, but if she is afraid, she may set 8 men to watch in her room. Oh, no, said the princess, there'll be no need of that. She knew him so well. And so Boots laid outside the princess's bed that night. But if she hadn't slept much the night 2 nights before, she had even less sleep that night, for she couldn't shut her eyes the livelong night, but lay and looked at Boots, who lay alongside her outside the quilt. So when she got up in the morning, they were going to row Boots back to the island, she begged them to hold hard a little bit, and in she ran to the king, and she begged him so prettily to let her have Boots for a husband, she was so fond of him, and unless she had him, she would not care to live. Well, well, said the king, you shall have him if you must, for he who has such things is just as rich as you are. So Boots got the princess and half the kingdom. The other half he was to have when the king died. And so everything went smooth and well. But as for his brothers, who had always been so bad to him, he packed them off to Beggar's Island. There, said Boots, perhaps they may find out which is best off, the man who has his pockets full of money, or the man who has all the women fall in love with him. Nor, to tell you the truth, do I think it would help them much to wander about the Beggar's Island, pulling pieces of money out of their pockets. And so, if Boots hadn't taken them off the island, there they would still be, walking about this very day, eating cheese parings and scrapings of the porridge pots. The end. Thank you for listening to Short Stories with Miss Sam. I hope you are entertained by today's stories and that you join me next week. Short Stories with Miss Sam is brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio and can be heard each week on Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. here on WHDD 91.9 FM. All the sounds used in this episode are from freesound.org.